And His Holiness also made the comment at that conference that he feels that sometimes we pamper the teachers too much. And this is something, again, I think we really have to think about as Westerners, especially with Asian teachers coming, because you very often see, you know, the lamas coming, and it's like we don't let them do anything for themselves. Yeah, I mean, we're just completely pampering and cluttering around them and doing all this sorts of stuff. And His Holiness says, you know, we shouldn't pamper. Of course, that doesn't mean that you neglect your teacher, because obviously, you know, if you neglect to fulfill your, you know, if you don't help your teacher and if they don't have what they need to live, well, you're not going to benefit much. So it's a thing of mutual benefit. I mean, it's like you have to help your teacher as a way of repaying kindness and a way of keeping on receiving that kindness, okay? But it doesn't mean this kind of overextended pampering that goes on. And in this light, I know I'm digressing a little bit from the Long Rim outline, but I'm just throwing something out here as that is my own personal opinion, okay? And that I wonder sometimes what it really means to please our teachers. For example, some of the ways in which we spend money when, for example, His Holiness or some of the other high teachers are coming, you know, like we might, some places they build a house for, you know, His Holiness has a special room in the center. Nobody else stays that there. His Holiness comes once every 4 or 5 years and stays 2 or 3 nights, and they paint it and redecorate it each time before His Holiness comes. Now, in Tibet, this was really a way of offering respect to your teacher. I mean, the more you can give them physically, the more material things, kind of the greater merit it is, the greater positive potential you create by making offerings, the greater respect you're showing to your teacher. But there is that also that element in our culture, too, to really be very lavish with people we respect a lot. My doubt, okay, and again, this is my personal opinion, when I think of His Holiness, you know, I mean, His Holiness, if the room were very nice and pleasant, you know, I don't think His Holiness would care how old the paint job was, you know, if it was the same paint job as 5 years ago. And I think His Holiness would probably want more that all that money be used, let's say, to help the monasteries so that people who aren't yet Buddhas can practice more and release themselves from suffering. Yeah? I mean, my own personal opinion is I think very often the Tibetan system is there's a lot of pomp and ceremony. And another example is His Holiness, very often before the monks in the monasteries in the south take their Geshe exams, they have to offer huge amounts of money to the monastery and have paintings and statues built. They have to buy akata, you know, these silk scarves for every single monk and make offerings. And it's true, that does create a lot of good karma, you know, by painting statues and creating tankas and making offerings to the Sangha. That definitely creates good karma on the part of these Geshe candidates. But His Holiness, I think, doesn't really think that it's necessary that everybody does that, because sometimes, I mean, monks aren't supposed to have a lot of money, so how do you get all this money to go give to make all these offerings? And so it becomes a huge economic burden on these monks, and they have to borrow money from their families, or they have to write to their sponsors in the West, or they have to do who knows what to get the money, because it's expected of them to give all these lavish offerings, you know? And His Holiness doesn't think that's a good system to perpetuate. Okay? I happen to agree with it. because it seems to me, if you're going to have all that money, build toilets in the monasteries, for heaven's sakes. You know, because there's such lousy sanitation and all the monks get sick. And I think they could use a toilet more than a silk scarf. Or, and, you know, and also, even if you didn't, if you don't have the money, you could still become a geshe. But somehow, you know, the system is so ingrained in this idea of lavish offerings. And it's just, you know, there's so much social pressure in the monastery. And so again, you know, this is similar to the kind of pressure we feel when the lamas come here, you know, that they have to, we have to rent limousines and they have to stay in the best place and they have to eat filet mignon and they, you know, I mean, outlandish amounts of money spent. And I think that very often, I mean, the people who are real Buddhist practitioners, something plain and simple that meets their necessities. I mean, if they need a lot of telephones and a fax machine, because, you know, I mean, His Holiness does when he travels, great, you have to provide that as the host. But I think His Holiness would be much happier if, you know, people weren't pressured into, you know, making offerings, and if the money was, and if people did have extra money, give it to other people who really needed it in a way that enabled them to practice the Dharma. Yeah. So again, this is just, you know, some of my ideas about Dharma coming to the West and how we as Westerners are going to relate to the Tibetan custom of, you know, being very, you know, lavish in everything we do. His Holiness, this last year when he was staying in San Francisco, after His Holiness arrived at the hotel, I was with the person who was organizing it, and he was dropping me off at the BART station. And the guy was in a tizzy because His Holiness was going to this event in the evening, and he had arranged for a limousine to take His Holiness. His Holiness said, "I don't want to go in a limousine. I want an ordinary car." Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, this guy didn't have an ordinary car, so he had to dig it up. Yeah, but I mean, this to me is saying something about His Holiness, and really, you know, something to keep in mind about how to, you know, be with our teacher. Okay. But again, this is also some of my personal opinion, so you're free to evaluate and think as you wish. But it's something I do think about with Dharma coming to the West. Yeah. Also, I mean, while we're on this subject, now it's my turn to go off on him. I see sometimes, like in Dharma centers, you know, or some publicity for things, that if you become a benefactor for a certain event, then you get a token, or you get to sit in the front row, or you get to have a private lunch, or something like this. Personally speaking, again, that doesn't feel quite comfortable. It seems to me, I mean, if people want to be benefactors, it's marvelous. I mean, because if we have the money and we can give it to help people come and teach the Dharma and to help people listen to it, it's good for them, and it's also very meritorious. It creates a lot of good karma on our part. Yeah, but to hold out as a prize that if you do it, you get, you know, you get this prize, something feels uncomfortable about that to me. Because then it's like if you have a lot of money, you get to sit in the front row. And if you're poor, and you see, I'm usually a person who's poor and I'm the nobody, so I've experienced this myself. I can't pull status and I can't pull money to get me into things. But if we bring Dharma over here, and it depends on your status and who you know and how much money you have to get you into things, I don't think that that's right. Yeah. So I think, you know, when we organize Buddhist things as much as possible, you know, to really be kind of fair and open to everybody. Now, it's true, if somebody is a benefactor, like, you know, if, let's say, somebody all of a sudden gives a house to DFF, I mean, people are going to be really grateful, and we should definitely show our gratitude to people who benefact, okay? I mean, because people who help us in our practice, you know, I mean, they're incredibly kind, and we should definitely show our gratitude to them. Yeah, and maybe do some special things to them. But do that, do whatever we do out of a feeling of gratitude instead of, you know, if you give us this, we'll give you that. Yeah, you see what I mean? So again, that's just something to think about. Maybe I'll just review right now and then open it up for questions. Okay. And then the last part we'll do next time. So, you know, in recognizing that there's a lot for us to gain personally by having a good relationship with our teacher, that there's many advantages to it, then we want to try and train ourselves to see that person's positive qualities and in that way practice what they teach us. And we also want to avoid projecting and getting nitpicky and getting real negative about whatever things they do that don't meet our fixed image of how we want them to act. And to avoid doing this because our opinion could be very unrealistic, you know, because we project things onto other people, we like the people who agree with us, and so on. And so to use this as a mirror to help us, you know, really open our mind to different ways of doing things and different things like that. Okay, so we do receive a lot of benefit from regarding our teachers in a positive way. And then it's possible to do this, again, because, you know, when we're attached, we see good qualities in people that don't have them. So definitely our teachers who do have good qualities, it should be possible for us to see them this way. And also because, you know, we don't have the karma to be able to see the Buddha as, you know, a body radiating light and so on. So, you know, if we should try and still recognize that they can appear in this ordinary form and see their good qualities in that way. And then what to think in order to mentally develop a good attitude towards our teacher. First, to remember that in the scriptures there's lots of quotations by the Buddha saying that he will appear in degenerate times in the form of spiritual masters. To remember that our teachers are the media for conveying the Buddha's inspiration to us. In other words, they channel, you know, the inspiration, the teachings, so that it can actually spark the understanding in our mind. And that the Buddha and that our teachers are, you know, doing the same work as the Buddha. I remember Geshe Darge said that to me one time. It really struck me. You know, if the Buddha came here, he wouldn't say anything different than what our teachers are saying. Yes. And so, and I think this is something really essential to think about. I mean, if the Buddha came, he's not going to say anything. I mean, the Buddha taught it already before. Our teachers are teaching us exactly what the Buddha said. So if the Buddha came, if he showed up here, he's not going to say anything different than what our teachers are already teaching us. Yeah. And so really to remember that and to in that way have a feeling of confidence in our teachers, what they are instructing us to do. And then also to remember that the whole reason people became Buddhists was so that they can benefit us. So they're certainly not going to abandon us and refuse to benefit. And the best way they can benefit is clearly by coming and teaching us the Dharma. Yeah. So it's very possible that our teachers, you know, can be Buddhas appearing in that form. And then the whole point again, that our own opinions aren't always so reliable. Okay. So to take things that might appear questionable, you know, minor things, you know, I'm not talking about grave unethical behavior, but you know, other things that maybe we don't understand, and try and say, well, this is what I look like when I'm doing this, or what other reason could my teacher have for doing this kind of behavior. I just to give you an example, I remember one time I was at Copan, and the Copan, this is the monastery in Nepal, they had just built a brick wall around it. And they were in the process of putting glass on top of the brick wall, and Lama Yeshe was out there with them putting glass on top of the brick wall. And at first my mind went, Lama Yeshe, he wants compassion for all beings, and what's he doing putting glass on top of brick walls? You know, it's like, you know, my mind was saying, this is like saying, this is our property, we don't want anybody else in here, you know, and if you try and get in, we're going to cut you to pieces. You know, and this is how my mind was perceiving what Lama was doing. And then I thought, hold on a minute, you know, maybe Lama is also recognizing that As abbot, it's his responsibility to protect the welfare of all the young monks at Koh Phan. And if thieves did come, you know, if somebody steals from the Sangha community, it's incredible negative karma. Incredible negative. If you harm people who are engaged in the Dharma practice, you really harm yourself much more than you harm them. So, you know, in putting the glass there, I mean, Lama is preventing these people from creating so much negative karma by doing that. So you see, just by looking at things in a different way. Okay. Also, you know, it's important not to develop negative states of mind when your teachers criticize you or when your teachers tell you things that you don't want to hear. Yeah, because we usually think, well, if this person's a Buddha and if this person's so highly realized, they should just always be kind to me. You know, unless I keep telling it. You know? And I think sometimes if your teacher sees that you have a really strong mind, you know, and that you really have a strong basis, then the teacher, I think, actually has much more freedom to point out your faults to you. Whereas a student who is very wishy-washy in their commitment to the Dharma, a student who doesn't have a lot of self-confidence, then to that student, the teacher always has to be very, very nice. Because if the teacher says anything that that person doesn't like to hear, they're going to run away. But to somebody, you know, who in one way is really much closer to the teacher because they have a more stable practice and they have the ability to listen to criticism, then the teacher's going to be able to be harder with them and actually point out their faults to them and say things that they won't like to hear. So I remember one time... I went to see Geshe Nawandarge, and I was about to start a retreat. And I went to say goodbye to Geshe La and ask him just a few questions about the sadhana I was going to do. And, you know, I asked him a few questions, and he kind of looked at me, and he said, "You don't understand what you're doing anyway. Why are you doing this retreat to start out with? You know, you just don't understand the simplest thing about this sadhana." And I was like, you know, because I just wanted him to pat me on the back and tell me how good I was and wish me a good retreat. Here he is telling me I don't understand anything, you know. So I left the room feeling completely topsy-turvy. And I walked up the hill from the library to Tushita because I was doing my retreat up the hill at Tushita. And just as I got there, Lama Yeshe was in the garden. And the whole way I'm thinking about this, well, I don't understand. Why am I doing this retreat? What is going to be? You know, there's a certain amount of truth to what you say. And Lama Yeshe was in the garden. And I mean, this is like, it's too much to be coincidence. It was like Lama was there waiting for me, you know. And I said, "Lama, you know," and I started asking him these questions, and then he started answering them. And later I came to think it was almost like they were setting this up. Yeah. And that somehow, you know, by Geshe La being really hard on me that way, he made me ask these questions, which then Lama answered and enabled me to have a better retreat. Yeah. And another time, you know, Geshe Nawandarge was teaching at the library, and His Holiness was teaching in Manali, and I wanted to go off to Manali to listen to His Holiness teach, and Alex Burson was going to translate. So I went to tell Geshe La that I was going. And he's so outrageous. He said, "Why are you going there? You know, you want to hear Alex Burson teach Dharma?" He said, "You can't understand His Holiness. You're only listening to Alex. What are you doing?" But I mean, it was really good because initially it made me like, hold on, you know, kind of. I got to reassess it. But then again, when I thought about it more in depth, you know, I really came to think, well, I know very well why I'm going. I mean, I want these teachings, and I really feel good, very strong connection with His Holiness, and I know this will be helpful for my mind. And so I went, you know. But I think Geshe La was, like, really making me think very deeply why I was doing this. Mm-hmm. I mean, lots of times our teachers can do this.